extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time from New York, New York. Kaylin asked me to do that, so I did it.
No, I did. No. I definitely did not ask for that.
Do we even know how Weeby intros the show?
I black out for the first 3 minutes of every show.
That's actually...
This is an episode of The A-Team. This is the A-Team right here. Kaylin Carr, Matt Doyle, Tom Boger. There's no other name who could be a part of the A-Team. This right here, it's the A-Team, man. Who would be Mr. T? Is Mr. T part of it? I'm looking at you for cultural references about the A-Team, which I've never watched in my life.
I was not a fan of that show growing up.
Okay. So you've never seen it and you don't know who's on it?
No, Mr. T was on it. Okay. And then there was the leader guy. Okay. And then there were two other guys.
All right. Say Tom's probably Mr. T.
Yeah.
You could be the leader guy. Then me and Kaylin will be the two other guys.
All right.
Cool. Now we've got everyone set. We've got Maria with us for this one. I believe Anders is on vacation because it's almost salmon spawning season. So he's got to go like touch rivers and waters and sense where they are and what's happening. And Andrew Ruby, of course, is in Asbury Park at the beach because you are here.
Snakes in the grass, bro. Snakes in the grass. Keep head on a swivel.
Watch out. New Jersey, man. It's cutthroat. We got a big show for you because, as usual, moments after finishing recording on Monday, big news broke. Portland Timbers parted way with Gio Savarese after 5 years as head coach of that team. So we'll talk about that move, what that means. There's another coaching vacancy that The Athletic has broken some news on. If you are not watching us on Apple TV MLS Season Pass right now, you wouldn't know that I was pointing at Tom because Tom is a reporter for The Athletic of the New York Times.
I'm a very serious person, as you see by this show.
Yeah, as you can see by the...
the gummy bear soccer shirt.
By that intro.
And then we've got a record sale to Chelsea.
Who reported that?
The New England Revolution, reported by
Fabrizio Romano.
You guys,
we move.
Fabrizio Romano tweeted out this information after Tom did, taking Tom's numbers. But with a picture of Georgi Petrovic holding a Dunkin' Donuts card.
That's where I slipped.
And first of all, he's holding the card, and the card is a person moving, America, and then it says Dunkin'. So it's just says America runs on Dunkin' in BMO in Toronto, and it's a classic shot across the bow of the Tim Hortons Dunkin' Donuts rivalry that has lived for a long time. So Fabrizio Romano has come out on his side. On that, where do you stand?
Dunkin' guy, yeah, through and through.
You're not a Wawa guy?
No, Dunkin' guy.
You're Dunkin' over Wawa?
Yeah, but like Wawa's, those aren't competitors.
Yeah, Wawa's more of like a 7-Eleven and sandwichy thing. I'm sure we have a competing sponsor that I shouldn't have mentioned any of those four brands, and I've spent a lot of
time.
Does
Adidas do coffee? I love Adidas coffee.
All four of them, but it was too fun, so I couldn't avoid it. And then, of course, we've got MLS weekend coming up. Lionel Messi is going to play his first ever game in Major League Soccer competition. And that's going to be something that we're probably going to talk about for a little bit. We will not be talking about U.S. Open Cup semifinals because we are recording this before it happened. We previewed it on the previous show. So if you want a little bit of preview before the game happens, you can listen to that. If the game already happened and you have nothing better to do, go listen to our preview and see how close we got and how relatable or relevant anything we said was in your free time. I wouldn't do it, but I'd be okay if anyone else did it. And I'd like for them to tweet at Matt Doyle about it.
Thank you.
And you have to tweet in all caps or he won't see it.
Yeah. Okay. So
people who tweet at me in all caps get like the instant mute.
So that's why you don't see any of my tweets?
Yeah.
Do you know I've muted no one. And I've never blocked anybody or muted anybody on Twitter.
I haven't really either.
It's just a wonderful, pleasant
but
place
you,
for me.
I also don't
tweet.
Yeah, so. You've had the healthiest relationship with social media out of any of us.
Easily.
Because you've always said, you have a tweet mm-hmm. and you release it into the world, and then you like close your computer or yeah. close the app on your phone, and like you don't interact yeah. with
no,
it.
No, it's not a conversation.
Yeah. And Caitlin is infinitely more likable than you and I.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, Goss is probably closer to Caitlin than us, but like I imagine that your Twitter feed
don't sell yourself nice. Short, Tom. Come on, man.
But then he gets worried when, like, if I tag him in a tweet.
And oh, that's
like,
oh when God, I panic. So if Tom's tagged me in a couple of tweets and I've seen like 20,
and suddenly you have like, angry Serbians in your mentions.
I'm like, oh no, what have I done?
Yeah,
this is it. And then I'm like, oh no, Tom just tagged.
Kaylin's last tweet was at an NYCFC NYC event Parks last night. Only New York event last night. Did you get me gear?
I didn't. No,
I want that NYC park stuff so bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. It was yeah. a good party. They put
on
a good time.
Invited to
yeah.
a party? Here's you with.
No, I just showed up. It's on Instagram. You just got to go.
He was the marquee. That's why people went.
One of his last five tweets was Doyle tweeting at him. Kaylin Carr paid me to tweet that.
That's true. It's just a shadow account. Matt Doyle's account. That's just my burner.
Let's move into actual Major League Soccer now. Gio Savarese and the Portland Timbers, as I said, officially parting ways, officially announced on Monday, right after we finish the show. Miles Joseph will be the interim through the rest of 2023, is what the release said, in which they thanked Gio Savarese for his time there, in which since 2018, he has taken the club to two MLS Cup finals, 2018, of course, in Atlanta, and then 2021, that home game against NYCFC. They also won the only MLS is back tournament, hopefully ever. So they have some hardware as well. And he now leaves in the middle of the season with them sitting below the playoff line. So let's start with what happened and then we'll go into the future. What is Gio's legacy with the Portland Timbers? How big a moment is this?
This is big. This is, you know, he has been there for more than half a decade now. You just listed the accomplishments, two runs to an MLS Cup in five seasons. That's really, wow. really good. Yeah. MLS is back. That I still think that tournament was fantastic. I had so much fun watching that tournament. And the way Portland played throughout that tournament was amazing stuff. Like that was maybe the best consistent stretch of soccer I've ever seen a Timbers team play, other than maybe the 2013 team that came so close to winning the Shield. They were great. And he guided them through a really rocky era where they were transitioning from being Diego Valeri's team to Sebastian Blanco's team. And that went
and quickly back out of that
really well. And then it didn't go as well transferring from Sebastian Blanco's team to Evander's team. This year is supposed to be Evander's team, and he has not lived up to it. But more to the point, the guys around him, especially in the attack, have not lived up to it. So it became a struggle. And it got really, really ugly this last weekend in Houston. The other legacies are like, look, there's a clear pipeline to South America. Now, that started before Gio. You could argue that started with Diego Chara, who's still there, 36, still looking incredible. Like 26, and Diego Valeri. But that, I think that South American influence grew under Gio. And I think that's a good thing. I think that less good is that there is still no pipeline for local play. Like other than maybe Minnesota, Portland have moved the fewest players along through the pathway to the pros. And if you talk to anyone around the league, they have one of the least built up academy pathways. Yeah, the thinnest academy pathways. Gio could have probably used his influence to change that a little bit. I don't think he did. They didn't do a great job of developing players like Jeremy Abobase. We talked about winning MLS's back. They won that tournament with Abobase as a striker. They made it to the 2018 MLS Cup final with Abobase as a striker. Gio primarily played him on the wing. Mm-hmm. They traded him to San Jose for now what looks like an absolute steal by San Jose. It was
1.1.
He scored 17 goals last year. He's on track for, double digits again this year. They sure could use a guy like that.
Yeah.
Santiago Moreno, who I think we all agree is one of the most talented young players, youngish players in the league. I think he's regressed year over year. So part of the legacy is that inability to get the most out of players who weren't already in, you know, the heart of their careers. And you need to be able to do that in MLS. You need to be able to do that in any club in the world outside of like the top eight or so. Like there's only 8 or 10 teams in the world who just buy finished products. And even like Real Madrid, they keep buying guys who are young and developing them. And the Timbers just have never had that in them as part of their club ethos. And part of Gio's legacy is furthering that and maybe even making it more ingrained is that, you know, we don't really develop players here. And I hope that whoever succeeds him plays a part in changing that, not just for the sake of local talented players in that homegrown academy, mm-hmm. but also for, you know, the next David Ashala or Pablo Bonilla or Santiago Moreno that they go out and buy, because there has to be more of it. But all that said, the job is to win games, make the playoffs, win trophies, and he mostly checked those boxes for a half decade. So you applaud him and hope he lands on his feet somewhere in MLS.
And it's hard to remember back, but it was sort of a similar situation when he came in of like Caleb Porter was a huge deal. Mm-hmm. He was part of the DNA of the Portland Timbers. He had won MLS Cup, mm-hmm. Been successful, and then sort of left out of nowhere. Not really, but it was not exactly 100% expected. And it was who's going to replace him. And it feels like Gio filled that void of the success on the field, but like the personality and MO of who he is. And he has been synonymous now with the Timbers for 5+ years, which is not something you say about every coach.
Yeah, he was the 5th longest tenured head coach, I believe, at the time of his dismissal, behind Peter Vermees, Jim Curtin, Adrian Heath. And is there one more I'm doing off the top?
Brian Schmetzer.
And Brian Schmetzer. So he was the 5th behind those 4. And like, you look at it, Cincinnati have had 4 full-time head coaches.
I should say that's part of the legacy as well. The Timbers dominated the Sounders under Gio Savarese.
Oh, that
too.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is like huge in that rivalry. So sorry.
No, you're good. And to the conversations I've had with people around the organization since this kind of dismissal happened is like, I don't know. They tried to treat it as highly as they could and tried to point that like when these decisions are made, you focus on the negatives, obviously. Like, this didn't come out of nowhere. We're going to get to the negative side of why this happened and why they did this now. But it was, you know, a quote that Ned Grabovoi, the GM, gave to me, who had been there in the entirety of Gio's reign. You know, when decisions like this are made, it's very difficult to think back and reflect where the club was 6 years ago. Gio played a major part in bringing us to where we are today. His legacy here goes down as very important. Success on the field and a lot of areas off the field where we've grown as a club. Like, They were all very careful, and both on and off on the record and on background conversations I've had, of like, we're focusing on the positives. Like, this is, you know, this was the hardest decision we've had to do. Gio is an incredible person in the discussion, and like when we informed him of the decision, he was a class act there. Like, he's been a class act all the time. Like, this is as like, I guess, positive of a parting that it could be, because there is no exit that's really clean. Yeah. But like, he leaves with everybody still feeling like really highly about him. And it's just part of life cycles. Like, this is what happens in soccer all across the world, that like, just at some point, the same person giving the same message doesn't have the same effect, or you can't evolve from, you know, era to era. And that's kind of what happened here. And like, again, everybody at the club went out of their way. Again, like, we've been around a lot of firings. Some of these press releases don't get a quote. It's 2 sentences and move out. There was like, Portland are very insistent on like, this was overall a fantastic era, and we're sad to see it end, but it had to end.
I think over the next 5 years, if the Timbers make 2 MLS Cup finals and win another tournament,
yeah,
we would say the next 5 years, like, they would sign off.
Oh my God, that. Yeah. Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so at the point.
Wait, you disagree?
No, no, yeah. 100%.
Okay. Yeah. You were laughing at Tom, so I thought.
No, no, I fully agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was convincing. That was really convincing.
Yeah. I was just checking.
Yeah, like, you see how dead he is behind the ice? He's gone back to 2011 and 2012. He's like, yeah, just make an MLS Cup is great. Yeah. I love this.
That's a good
2 time. MLS Cups is even better.
No, I think he always did well in those, like, in a knockout tournament and in those high leverage moments. You always knew Savarese was going to get the most out of his team. and sometimes overperforming. And even when you go back to his time with the Cosmos, that's what he was able to do. I think he won like two championships
three times.
Okay.
And even after Raul left.
Yeah. After the like kind of for, I think in the beginning, it was like the big franchise with the money. And then it was like suddenly not that thing pretty quickly. And he was still able to win championships, which is why I think he wasn't just looked at by Portland at the time. I think there were a bunch of suitors across MLS. And maybe even I'd heard he had even maybe not chosen to take a couple of jobs that were available to him. And so the Portland one, you're like, yeah, I'm going to jump at that, which by the way, I'm interested to see our conversation of who might come in next, because that is one of the best jobs in Major League Soccer with that atmosphere, that that fan base. But yeah, he could, the question for me was more the inconsistency, where it was like, oh wow, we weren't expecting them to get to the final in 2021. They just like in those moments could flip that switch, or we weren't necessarily expecting them to beat Sporting Kansas City on the road in 2018. But they were able to find that moment of magic, and a lot of that came through with Sebastian Blanco and Valeri, and they had that special piece. And it kind of felt like they were waiting on Evander to kind of help them escape this year in a lot of situations. And that just didn't quite click. A few times you see it, but then a few times it doesn't. And that's where the frustration starts to kick in, and you just don't have that safety valve to kind of rescue you in the same ways. And look, I don't put too much into this last game against Houston. Houston's very good at home. I don't have to tell you that. Time of year, no Diego Chara. Like, he's played nearly every minute this season. So he's, and literally like every match I've watched, he looks exactly the same as far as covering ground and winning
and
tackles.
And that's part of this, right? Like, Diego Chara is 36 years old. He is still the best player on this team.
Yeah. And I was looking through
a good chunk.
There's a lot of like even the other players they're relying on as secondary options, Dairon Asprilla. Like, there's a lot of names, Bravo, guys that have been in the last, were there for the last final, and it hasn't quite turned over as of yet. I didn't read too much into the idea of, I saw in Tom's article the piece where Ned came out and said, yeah, he didn't lose the locker room. Went from my experience, like all the stuff that happens of Santiago Moreno wanting to leave or Ivicic upset and they're splitting playing time between him and Bingham, like that happens, I think, in every locker room across MLS. There is, I think, because it's Portland, maybe some of that leaked out a little bit more, or it just became a bigger deal because of the fan support. But I believe that part of it as far as like, yeah, he seems like the type of guy that I think a lot of players want to play for. Now, that doesn't work for everybody at all times and all circumstances, but I would expect to see him get another opportunity. They're only 5 points out of playoff position. So with a good run, they could still do one of those turnarounds that we're used to seeing Gio
on Monday,
do.
On Monday's show, right? Because we had to choose, like, who do we think is going to make it through the fire?
And we said, if you had asked us 2 days ago.
I still picked Portland anyway.
Yeah.
And in part, that's because Gio has consistently gotten this team over the hump in the biggest games. Now, that didn't happen last year, but like, you know, his body of work speaks to that. Mm-hmm. I am less convinced now that Portland are going to be there in the play-in game. I don't think either way they're going to go farther than the play-in game, but it's like he had that effect on this team for a good long while.
Yeah. Do you think there's going to be a big roster overhaul?
I think this winter, I'm looking at this roster now, it's pretty brutal.
Needs refreshing.
You know, like,
you
I don't
feel like it's set.
Yeah.
I think, no, I'm being serious. I think a large part of this
is
that a lot of these players have come in more recently. You mentioned the in the prime thing. And so I don't believe there are a lot of them are on short term contracts. I mean, they've continued to spend and bring players in.
But they can add a DP. I believe it'd have to be a young DP or a restricted one. Like, Nia's goat is run. A lot of people thought it might end this year. Like he was, there was a month stretch. It was like at the MLS's back tournament and a little bit after that. He was really, really good. And then he tore his ACL. He's not been the same player since.
Yep.
And like, so that's part of the story. And again, everybody deals with injuries, so this doesn't absolve him from anything. But like, you know, Nia's goat has been hurt. Blanco hasn't played 2,000 minutes since 2019. And again, Evander.
And he's 35.
Yeah. But again, so like over the last 2 years, that's not a huge surprise. Like when they brought him back, understanding, and that's why the contract got reworked with the medical that they re-signed him at. But just he kind of go down. Yimi Chara hasn't quite hit. Like he was, you know, $8 million or whatever he was. I forget exactly what the number was. But like he's a fine player. He was like reminded me of Pizarro. Like you don't want him as a DP. Like he just isn't creating enough goals. So you gotta go down the roster, and that's also on the coach as well, of course, that the individual performances haven't kind of stuck out. And Kalen, your point on inconsistencies, I think, is so good, because that 2018 team, you're right. Like, oh wow, like what a fun run to the final. That was great. Oh, that was Gio's first year. Look at this. Okay, like what's he gonna do next year with a new roster? They finished in sixth and out in the first round. Like anytime that there were expectations on this team, they didn't live up to it. But anytime that we thought it was like going to be bad, they would kind of like they finished between fifth and eighth in the Western Conference, third and eighth, sorry, in the Western Conference over his five full seasons. So it was always kind of in the middle. It was never special, but it would, they were always in playoff contention.
So the next question I had on the rundown was why now? Is that
why
playoff issue?
Yeah. Yeah. Because look, Gio signed a new contract in the winter. Like, so they could have easily been like, well, we don't want to pay for another coach or do whatever, like, oh, like we'll give him more time. Like, this is a team that believes that the talent level exceeds where they are in the standings right now. So this is a team that believes with a change and you know a jolt of new energy, the new manager bounce, all of that, that they can climb to the playoff line, whether they do or don't. Like I think I'm with you. I feel less good about it than I did a few days ago, you know, before this news. But that's the belief. That's why they did it right now.
So you said you have less confidence that they can.
Yeah.
Miles Joseph will be the interim for the rest of the
year. I'll tell you, I mean, this game this weekend against Vancouver.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. Sitting right on the playoff line.
If Vancouver even just get a point out of this one, it is brutal for the Timbers.
So Miles Joseph will be interim. For any of people that don't know, Miles Joseph was an MLS original with the Metro Stars where he played.
With Gio Savarese.
With Gio Savarese.
Gio Savarese is my original favorite player in MLS.
Yeah. Do you have a legend, black man. And white striped?
I do not know. I never collected kits, but I actually have a signed and framed Gio Savarese Metro Stars picture.
That's unreal.
At home.
Of when did
you
get celebrating?
You were
goals?
42 years old.
Yeah.
two years ago.
Gio, my understanding, has always kept his home in, I believe, Brooklyn.
Correct.
Bay Ridge, something like that. Whatever. I mean, because I'm like a Brooklyn guy, so I kind of know the area.
He went to LIU. Like he was a professional soccer player in Venezuela before he came and played at LIU in college. And like I remember interviewing him like through the years and like talking. I was like, dude, like you were an international Venezuelan player, and then you played college soccer in America. I was like, was that the most fun you've ever had? And he's like, yeah, it was pretty cool. And then he stayed in that area, played with the Long Island Rough Riders, and then the Metro Stars. So this is a guy who's got so much, like that story is so much fun. And then he put his roots in Portland. Like he feels like a Portland guy because of how long he's been there. Yeah. So I don't know. It's just, he's got ties to the area.
From everything I've heard, like he would, if the Red Bull job were to open up,
gonna get pulled out with a crane. Yeah.
Doyle's about to come out with a trombone and just start going back in time.
Cornet. If that job were to open up, he would be really interested. I don't think so. And it doesn't seem like a great fit though, because the Red Bulls have a specific style of play.
So maybe we'll flip. And this
can I say a thing first before you disagree
with what you're about to say?
The Red Bulls have a specific style of play, right? We all know they're the highest, hardest pressing team in the league. Now they have a few bells and whistles that they add and subtract within that, but that is like the game model as dictated from Red Bull Global in Austria. Every coach that they have had over the past 9 seasons has followed that game model to a good degree, including Troy Lessing, who's doing, I think, a very good job. That is like the polar opposite from how the Timbers played in all of Gio Savarese's 5.5 years. They have never been a high-pressing team. In fact, I think over the past from 2019 to 2022, they led the league in clearances in their own box. If you look at that push to even make the playoffs in 2021, Lloris Mabiala was insane defending in the box. So it's not a great stylistic fit for one. And for two, like Mark de Grandpre was just in the press yesterday saying like, we, you know, part of our DNA is developing players, young players, especially local players. And what did we just say? Gio's main struggle was with Portland was he didn't develop the young players that they had, whether they were from South America or from Portland or from the college draft. So I don't see the fit. Tom disagrees with every word I just said. Every word. Look, he can't wait to say.
I understand the thought process, but like I just don't think it's that rigid. Like think of Jim Curtin.
I just couldn't feel your dulcet tones.
Think of he just moved my mic for people who aren't watching. That's why he just derailed me there. Like I derailed Doyle, so fair enough. Think of Jim Curtin. He didn't play the high pressing style before Ernst Tanner got there in Philly. How many players did they develop before then? Right. Like, so I just don't think that you can write off Gio as in this one situation. And yeah, like if he goes into the meeting and says, you know what, I want to play counterattack or I want to play possession, then you're right. Like, it's not a fit. But if he goes into that and says, yeah, I can buy into this and I'm going to buy into the club, I'm going to fit what we do around the club ethos as opposed to asking you to fit around me, then why not?
So what I would push back on of those comps is I think Gio's standing and experience in Portland is different than where Jim Curtin stood in Philly before Ernst Tanner got there, right? Gio, I think for many parts of over the last few years, was the soccer power player in Portland. And so it was like, okay, you could disagree. But
I wasn't.
You were thinking about what I was saying.
The soccer power player made me smile.
Like making decisions, right? And leading the club. And it's not that he was bad at developing players through the academy. He had no interest.
Yeah.
And he was not involved.
Yeah.
So that's where I would, but I do agree with you that we do have proof of people changing and doing different things. And also maybe.
Also, New York just has it's better a different
market.
Players.
Yes. And it's his market. Yeah. Again, we just said he came from playing college soccer and lower division, and I'm pretty sure he's like a cosmopolitan soccer league, like ethnic league legend in the New York area as well. I think that's how he ended up
Italians.
On the Metro Stars. Yeah. So he has a different experience in this area. Let's finish Gio out first before we go to the team. Okay, if it's not the Metro Star, if it's not the Metro Star, pop me in there.
All right, this is my favorite show ever.
Chicago Fire technically have an opening. Toronto FC, which we'll talk about more.
I'm wrong. It was not Brooklyn Italians. It was Greek American AA.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe he played with Dean Moraitis, my coach at the time. We know that Toronto has technically an opening as well. There's this one. Miami's already filled. Is there another job I'm forgetting right now? Or someone's already been hired. Whatever it is.
But there's going to be a lot more.
Yeah, fair.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say too much, but there's got to be in the offseason.
So would your expectation be that Gio Savarese is a head coach in MLS next season at the start of the year? Do you think he goes somewhere else?
I don't think at the start of the year.
Oh, I would expect him to be as a head coach at the start of the year. I just think with the amount of jobs that are going to open up, his track record, his connections. I mean, unless it's something abroad.
Yeah.
Because I think he's been linked somewhere else before.
Venezia last summer. Venezia were interested in trying to sign him. Didn't.
Yeah. Or his agent was interested in telling Tom that Venezia was interested.
No, I can say that I have several sources on that. Yeah. And Portland weren't going to let him go.
But I think coaches are malleable in the sense. Now, some aren't. But part of the issue I have with, I think, the Red Bull over a while has been that it's been just this like directive from above where it hasn't necessarily had like a coach's imprint on it to be able to adapt it to the way that they see it. And Troy Lesane hasn't played like high press energy soccer his entire career either. And he's like, I talked to Daniel Edelman, he's saying, oh, he's trying to get me to play a little bit more. But it's just so limiting in a sense. I mean, I think Gio has the personality to push things forward and maybe a little bit of like but wherever he goes, I could see it looking different than Portland because you have to, as a manager, step in and say, okay, well, what do I have available here? Are we going to spend? Yeah, well, I can spend a little bit. Maybe the academy is not as fleshed out as I would like. I'm just assessing what I have to pick from.
Right.
And then you kind of adapt your system to that. And that's kind of what I felt he was doing in Portland, whereas I could see him in another situation doing something completely different.
And another point why I think he would make sense for the Red Bulls as well is that the Red Bulls need somebody that cares about the club, that can have connections to the community. Like this team just felt like Red Bull Global that happens to play in America. And I think Troy Lesane has helped a lot with that over this year. So I don't want to be dismissive of his opportunities to get.
But I think they want Troy to stay on.
Point being, Gerhard Stuber felt like he took the job with a foot out. No, I'm serious. No, foot out the door. And that's all we talked about.
Yeah. That's been the complaint.
And Gio wouldn't be that. Yeah, Gio would be like, this is my dream job. This is where I want to be.
And Troy, I think, is similar as well. So I think that they should be going that route rather than, hey, Red Bull Salzburg, you have an assistant that you want to send to us? Right. I think that that's something that they really need for the fan base and the relevancy of this team. Because right now, they're middling. They're not good enough to have I'm sorry, catching a stray here. Red Bulls aren't good enough to have, fans care. attendance is down again. Like, and like, if you're mediocre and like, there's ambivalence in the market, because if the coach doesn't really care, if the roster turns over so often, like, think about all the fan favorites that have gone. Like, what is the identity of this team? Gio Savarese or Troy Lezane, I'm sure that he's already winning the fan base over. That's somebody that would, you know, give you relevancy, that would give you a connection with fans. I think that's important that they've been lacking.
Red Bulls woke up this morning and they're like, Messi's coming this weekend. The only news in the league happened as far physically possible away on the other coast as it could be.
And everybody's calling us the Metro Stars.
Good day. And we woke up and we were like, we're coming for you. A lock in. Also,
see you at Red Bull Arena on Saturday.
There's a second team in New York who are also currently under the playoff line. So we shouldn't say, while he is a legend with one club, he could come back to the area for other teams as well. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Gio. He's clearly going to be a name that's immediately interviewed and connected with a ton of jobs. Let's move to Portland now. So Miles Joseph, the interim for the rest of the year. Tom and Jeff at The Athletic put together a list. That was for this or for a previous?
That was for this. Like, okay. We threw out five names.
Five names. And then we worked on 47 other names since then.
Start writing them all down, folks.
Before we do names, what is top of the list you think for Portland in looking for this person? Is it winning right now? It feels like Joseph's probably going to get the rest of this year. Is it changing the academy? Is it changing the style of play? Is it just a new voice? What do you think their bullet points are when they say this is what we're looking for?
That's a really good question. My guess is that they want someone who has a sort of broader vision and probably, you know, the ability to collaborate with Ned Grabovoy, who's the GM now, on executing a vision. Now, it's not to say they didn't have that under Gio, but it got kind of lost over the past 18 months, really ever since Sebastian Blanco got hurt and Evander was supposed to replace that. And like, okay, so then what's the vision? I guess the vision is just feed Evander, feed your number 10 and have him. Like, it needs to be a little bit more than that, I think. There are going to be a lot of candidates, like even maybe especially because it seems like this team is headed towards a rebuild this offseason, at least a partial rebuild this offseason. I think that makes it more attractive because there's going to be pressure for 2024, but it's not going to be make or break. We need a 65-point season and three home playoff games. It's going to be like, okay, help Evander settle, maybe get a little bit more out of Christian Paredes, and if they are lucky enough to keep Eric Williamson healthy, like, okay, do we have a succession plan for Diego Chara? Okay, can we build something a little bit more robust in the, you know, back line? Is Zach McGraw and Dario Zuparic, is that the right combination, or do we have the ability to throw different sort of combinations at the wall there? Can we keep developing Juan David Mascara to the point where he shows some defensive? I'm not saying make him the best defensive right back, but like show some defensive ability out there, because if they do that, then we're talking I think at $8 or $9 million
absolutely
attacking fullback on the international market. So like the ability to juggle all that stuff and then I think play a style of play that the Portland fans got used to, especially when Valeri and Blanco were there together, where it wasn't about having the ball, because they were a great counterattacking team more than anything else. But like when they had you, they had you. They absolutely ripped you apart. That's been gone for a while now.
The name that is just coming to me now is Oscar Perea. Yeah.
He is out of contract.
Out of contract at the end of the year with Orlando.
I'll go on the record and say that Orlando are crazy if they let him go.
Yeah.
Like, do we all remember how bad Orlando was before Oscar Pereja got there? Like, they were terrible.
Yeah, I think similarly, a team or a manager that can get the best out of his players in these situations. Also, I think, like I was saying, you have to assess the roster and what you have and what you don't have coming in. You also have to acknowledge who's still on the roster and how quickly you can remold it. And most of the team is South American. So I think having an idea of somebody that can connect to that culture, speak multiple languages, and then I think has that kind of like, I still think they can keep the identity of being a tough team to play against. We know that from Perea. That's the way he's... But then he's also got the wrinkle of adding in maybe some of this, these other traits of like youth development, bringing across young players and building culture around it. So that was the name that I wasn't thinking about, because we literally went through all the list, but a lot of them were managers that were available or assistants. Mm-hmm. But it was the one where I was like, oh, from a head coach. And we started to see this more with Wilfred Nancy.
Yep.
We've seen it... I'm trying to think, anybody else?
Since he tried to take Jim Curtin.
Right, okay, yeah. And we're saying, oh, could this happen more and more? And with that waiting right now, with that contract situation, that one was interesting to me.
On the makeup of the roster as well, because we have mentioned rebuilt, Evander has a deal through 2026. Juan Mosquera is through 2026. David Aijala is through 2025. Oh. Claudio Bravo through 2026. Morris, 2025. They'll keep Diego Chara as long as he's willing to play for them, no matter what. They just signed Araujo as a center back, so that's another long-term deal. So while there might be some change, and there will be DP spots open specifically, a lot of this roster is coming back. As you said, a lot of it is South American or Central American, so there is that sort of lean to it. So Oscar Pereja has won. The list of five names in Tom and Jeff's piece was John Herdman, who we're going to talk about in a little bit, probably TFC leaning from The Athletic. Phil Neville, Ante Razov, Ezra Hendrickson, and Danny Cruz. So Phil Neville, we know, let go from Inter Miami, and you can watch him right here on MLS Season Pass. Ante Razov, current assistant at LAFC under Steve Cherundolo. Ezra Hendrickson, let go earlier this season from the Chicago Fire, his first head coaching job. And then Danny Cruz is the Louisville head coach. Mm-hmm. He's had a ton of success there, a young coach, head coach. But in the list of who are the lower division coaches that should get interviewed, he comes up pretty often as one of the first few names.
And Portland's managerial history, they hired Caleb Porter from the NCAA. He was with Akron. And they hired Giuseppe Resi from the NASL. So like, they've shown that like they'll look at these levels. And MLS has changed since those two coaching hires. Mm-hmm. And this process will be different. But they haven't overlooked these markets.
Okay. Does anyone feel strongly about any of those names? Should I throw some more names out there?
I mean, I just spent the past 3 weeks working with Phil Neville. He's a good guy. He speaks Spanish. I think his track record in Miami was actually very good.
I agree.
Given
when they had real rosters.
When they had real rosters. Yeah. You know, like as soon as they got a number 10 last year, he was able to plug Pozuelo in. And what had been a team that was just grinding suddenly became a team that could play. He did a really nice job with that. And from speaking with him, I know he likes a project. He likes the idea of being somewhere for multiple years where you get to sort of have an imprint. And if you look at what Miami did, you know, he was putting Noah Allen out there. He was putting Ruiz out there. He was putting Frey before Frey got injured. He was putting Ben Kramaski out there as well.
Last year they started Ryan Saylor and Amy Wabika.
Yeah.
Like half the games. Not joking. Like, he played young center backs because he didn't feel like the other ones were good.
Yeah. So, I mean, just having worked with him, he's a good guy. I like Phil Neville's, like, he's got the name recognition. He's not going to get an interview because I'm saying this here.
Oh, it feels like most people normally listen to Extra Time and they're like, oh, Doyle said it? Then that's
right.
How we'll go take care of our business.
But I do expect this to be a pretty deep and broad search. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I think Miles Joseph could win the job.
Yeah.
So Miles Joseph, I think I started, he MLS original, Gio's teammate. He then basically, after finishing his playing career where he played with Jason Kreiss, he's been Jason Kreiss' assistant or Gio's assistant for the last 13 years. So he was the assistant at RSL.
When Ned Grabovoy was there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Under Jason Kreiss from 2010 to 14. He then came to NYCFC with Jason Kreiss in 2015, where Ned also was, I believe. And then was an assistant in Orlando with Jason Kreiss till 2018, where he then returned or went to Portland and worked under Gio for the last 5 years. So he is that interim. I think that's an interesting name. He's a name that I had heard from other clubs over the last year of is on the list of current assistants that we would interview if we were looking for a job. So it's not just that he's connected to the Timbers already or that he has the interim role, but it feels like if he gets results this season, it's a pretty easy one to say it already works. Why change things?
Yeah. And like they did make it a point to say he's the coach for the rest of the season. And like, So at any time you have to be in this conversation. So depending what the team looks like, as you say, like he's got a chance, and that's how it should be.
Other big names that came to mind, you talked about current coaches in Pareja. I think Robin Fraser's one that always gets mentioned, and maybe the way this year has gone, it's it in Colorado, whether it's on his side or the club side. We don't know. I'm not saying it is, but he's one that's always going to get connected because he has had success, maybe using pennies against the dollar at time in this league, and has obviously been connected to, in Toronto, some of the best teams this league's ever seen. I put Freddy Juarez down and Mark Dos Santos as current assistants that you'd think would get interviewed because they either have head coaching experience already, they are highly touted as assistant coaches. So that's, I think, the majority of the list of people who are MLS current who make sense.
Yeah.
And then you start to go outside the box. Pa Modica as well, assistant at Charlotte, I know has interviewed for head coaching jobs before, one with Pacific, was part of North Texas, and has been connected to some of the jobs and obviously has Pacific Northwest, Portland Timbers ties specifically, playing for that club. So I think those are the MLS ones. You go outside of MLS and you can get as wild as you want. I put down Jesse Marsh first because he currently does not have a job, and Marcelo Gallardo. Those are my top two. Tom, stoked about
Gallardo
it.
Gallardo would be a get.
Why not try to get Klopp from Liverpool or Pep from City?
Everyone, Gallardo was going to leave River to go coach Barca or Real Madrid, and now it's been how long that he hasn't had a job?
I don't know.
So
it's been about a year.
He played in MLS. He is not working.
He played 10 games in MLS, and he hated it.
He doesn't have to immediately left. He doesn't have to run as much as head coach.
That's a fair point.
But we have seen bigger names from outside of MLS, quote unquote. He's not totally outside. Come to this league now.
I don't think so. Really? I think as a head coach, right? I think Tata would be the only one.
Phil Neville.
Phil Neville was not as big a name as a coach as Marcelo Gallardo is.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
He won multiple Copa Libertadores. I think he's officially the most successful River Plate manager.
Guillermo Barros Scalotto.
MLS ties.
Yeah, neither of the...
Well, Heinze doesn't have MLS.
No, I know.
Diego Alonso.
Yeah, none of those guys were as big in the coaching world as Marcelo Gallardo is. It like you just said,
hasn't had a job for a year.
Yeah, I think that'll change by winter. I think he'll be.
Doyle's breaking Olympiacos news.
Be a bigger club than Olympiacos.
Okay, so we can take him off.
But so if you could get him, you get.
Yeah,
him. I don't think you bring Scalotto back. Scalotto didn't do a great job with the Galaxy with way more resources.
Okay. You wanted to throw Frank Lampard on the list, former MLS player, obviously, is currently also does not have a job.
Yeah, I would not. I would not.
Are we going to put the blanket of Weeby texted the show to say this?
Yeah, right? Alessandro Nest is an interesting one to me because he's someone who actually had a measure of success with Miami FC in the lower divisions. And then he went back to Italy, he coached in Serie B for a couple of years. Actually, those teams played good soccer. They never got promotion, so he never retained his job. And he gave, God, it's a year and a half ago now, maybe even longer than that. He gave an interview in the Italian press where he's like, I want to manage an MLS because they give you time to put together. It's what Phil Neville said. They give you time to put together your vision. And it's not, you're not living and dying every single weekend. Now, I understand how that's a criticism of MLS in some ways.
Also, we get this tweet from a fan. I apologize right now. I can't remember. Every time a coach gets let go of like, people say this and then there's like seven job openings throughout every year. Mm-hmm. So it's like kind of true and also kind of not.
Fair. But Nest is someone who, if I was running the search, I would absolutely bring in.
We've brought up Hugo Perez a ton
because
of what he's done with El Salvador and obviously his experience living here and being American. We put on a list Mikey Varas, who was with the USU-20s and has interviewed around MLS.
Interviewed with Columbus last year.
In there. And PJ Callahan.
Yeah.
Current USMNT coach? No? Former interim USMNT coach?
That's a good question. Where does he stand in August?
Yeah, right.
Between the contracts. Yeah, no, he's a longtime national team assistant. Before that, he was Jim Curtin's assistant in Philly. You talk to Jim Curtin, you talk to Greg Berhalter, you talk to other assistants, Nico Estevez, anybody who he's kind of coached with and worked with. like all speak glowingly about him and say that he should be involved in these conversations. I don't know if he's going, if he's really been interviewed. I don't know if he wants to. I don't know if he just wants to save the national team to the World Cup, but he's somebody that should at least be mentioned.
And then there was a few other names. We had like a Rafael Vicky and a Veljko Paunovic who have been in MLS that could be and have expressed interest in coming back. And then I made a list of people who have played with Ned Graffel.
Friends.
Currently coach or in the coaching world. The most obvious one is Javier Morales. He's been a youth coach in Inter Miami's academy for a few years now. So he has, when you look at what is a resume of like, you're ready for your head coaching debut, Javier Morales has checked the boxes. He has experience now working as a coach. And then he took over as interim for a little while at the first team. He obviously himself as a player, I think, played the way you just talked about of like what Timbers fans would want to see and what as a club you could sell saying this is what this hire means. He's an Argentine who's an assistant for a team under Tata Martino Messi. Yeah. But
for those who don't know MLS history and lore, there's like a direct line between RSL signing Javier Morales 15 years ago and Lionel Messi actually being in MLS now. Because Javier Morales, if you talk to guys who came after him from South America, like Diego Valeri, like Nico Ladero, they say, well, we all knew Javi and we saw how much he loved it in MLS. So he's a big name. I can't imagine him leaving Miami right now.
Every time you talk to someone who takes a head coaching job or is interested, they say there are 29.
Yeah.
I don't get fair. A second one. And if you're Javi Moe and you have a relationship with Ned Grabovoi that you trust, to have a sporting director who you trust.
But I still think that he had a taste of what it was like to be the head coach without maybe the best setup. And now he's learning from Tata Martino. He's around this environment. I almost can't think of a better proving ground or training ground if you want to be a big time manager one day than to be in Tata's film rooms every day, like on the training ground with Lionel Messi. Like, this feels like a perfect setup for him. I have no doubt that, like, I hear what you're saying with like the 29 teams and you got to take your chance, but we've seen a lot of managers step forward before they're ready and suddenly you're out and it's a much harder path back. Whereas I think in the past it was like, oh, well, once you're head coach, you're just going to move around from city to city and like you'll be a head coach for life. And I think it's way more competitive now to get your foot in the door. So you want to make sure that when you get your foot in the door, it's the right situation, it's the right platform, and it's not just going to be, all right, well, thanks for your time. And now you're in a tough spot. So
if he's in this situation right now, like doors are still going to be open for him 2 years from now.
Yeah. And it might be in Miami.
Yeah.
Like Tata's not going to be there for 10 years. Right. That's not what he's
doing. It might be with Tata somewhere else.
Yeah. True. Once you get on, Hamison Olave's been head coach of Real Monarchs now for 4 years, 5 years. He went to a final. That's a guy that played with Ned Grabovoi. That's a guy who has helped develop young players.
South American.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then Mehdi Bellucci, I believe they played together at NYCFC. He's been an assistant at New York for a while. He won an MLS Cup in Portland as an assistant. He is someone I know that people think very highly of when it comes to youth development, as well as game models and soccer ideas. And I just had one more that totally I blanked on that was from that background. And that's, I think, a large part of the names we can come up with. And none of them are going to get this job. It is going to be someone from the Belgian third division that we didn't think of, that the analytics lover, something like that. Who knows? As we roll on. So that's the Portland Timbers. I think this is fascinating. This is a club that you kind of always bring me back on it of like, this is a big club in MLS. This is a huge atmosphere. Going to a Timbers game is like once in a lifetime for a lot of MLS fans. I remember when Gio got the job, we were at Combine getting ready for the season and we sat down with him and it was like his fire and connection with the Timbers Army, you knew was going to be great. And it was, right? He was, as a player and then as a coach.
He resonates.
Yes.
Yep.
That's what Timbers Army is as well. That's what that atmosphere is like. That's what they want. Caleb was different, but Caleb obviously has a ton of confidence. And it was already a big name in U.S. soccer circles when he took over. It will be interesting to see what direction this goes in. But this is a big moment, I think, in MLS history of like the Portland Timbers have now had three coaches in their entire existence as an MLS team. And the third one just got let go or they parted ways with.
off topic, quick tangent, when Goss was saying we were at the combine getting ready for the season. I know he meant the players' combine. I'm thinking of, imagine Goss and Kalen sitting in front of mics getting ready for the season, doing voice stuff.
Curl.
Sitting. Okay, how long can I sit in a chair? What's my posture like?
I need five cough buttons in 30 seconds. And then we're doing 20-second intervals and then five cough buttons.
It's just you just dipping mints in your water.
Comes from somewhere, man.
We'd be doing voice things in the corner.
God, that would be a train wreck.
Yeah. New content, Apple TV.
We did used to
Let's have the meeting.
We did do the like, oh, let's do the things that they do, like the shuttle runs and the jumping and stuff like that.
How'd that go?
No way.
I have some untapped athletic ability that you don't know about. In there. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was listening to the show on Monday and you said something about how you take your penalties.
Yeah. I didn't say I was a good soccer player. I said untapped athletic
And you're like,
ability.
This is how you said, you're like, this is how I train every day.
And this I was is how like, I work and this is how I play. Okay. That's what I said.
I was like, you train every day?
Yeah, you don't know that I'm at Pier 5 at 4:45 a.m. every single day doing
just taking
2 hours.
Blindfolded, just smashing them.
That's how me and Messi got to where we got. And that's where we are now. Let's finish off with another coaching convo. TFC, The Athletic reported this week that John Herdman, current Canadian men's national team head coach, is the front
runner. Just say Tom.
Brother, do you work there?
Yes.
No way. That's wild, dude. I love
it. Give my golden boot draft partner some dap, man.
Oh, I didn't realize we were.
That means Kalen's honorary athletic.
We're flanked by winners.
Adjacent. Athletic adjacent.
I have so many jokes, but I don't want to make. That John Herdman is the front runner for the job. Mm-hmm. Do you want to elaborate more, or did you put it in an article so we don't have to elaborate more? And we move on.
Do you want me to elaborate?
I want to hear it.
Sources believe that Herdman is the front runner, and people are very much expecting that he gets this job. I did name him for Portland because that's been connected to me through sources, kind of like nothing concrete, just like, hey, like this is something that
he lives in Vancouver.
Yeah, I was going to say, for people who don't know, as Canada coach, they don't have a home base. He lives in Vancouver, right. Even though Toronto's also in Canada.
Yeah.
His son plays in the Whitecaps Academy.
Correct.
Yeah. So again, and that's near Portland. So that's why, and just to cover my
if you want to turn this into a geography podcast, yeah. I am
talking about rivers. Are there any rivers around the area?
Oh, you want rivers in the Pacific Northwest? We already did a salmon spawning thing, so we've got like so much to go with.
So that's the expectation. And they've also interviewed DC United assistant Carl Robinson, former QPR manager Mark Warburton, and the Forge FC head coach that I can't pronounce his name. Bobby Smyrniotis.
Hmm. I always assumed Robinson was the successor for Wayne Rooney when he left.
But again, there's 29. If someone calls you for an interview.
I mean, they are playing Carl Robinson style soccer.
Yeah, all the players they're signing. I was like, well, is...
Can they kick 70 yards?
Well, I was like, what is the plan here? Because they just continue to sign players from the UK. And I was like, when Wayne Rooney leaves, are they going to be able to... Like, are they going to remake the whole
team? It's an untapped market in England. Like, no one's really been keyed in on soccer there. So there's a lot of
called football, mate. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of under the radar players.
So anyway, I was assumed Robinson would be. I mean, he had some MLS coaching experience. I assumed he would be kind of the successor there. But
John Herdman has never coached a club team.
Yeah. Right?
He coached New Zealand's. He left Sunderland's youth academy to go coach in New Zealand, first with the FA, then with the youth national teams, then with the women's national team. Then he moved to Canada to coach the women's national team, and he moved from the women's side to the men's side, all national team jobs. That's 20 years. But to many people, he has had success. He made it to a quarterfinal with the Canadian women's team. He helped New Zealand qualify, I believe, for their first Women's World Cup. And then on the men's side in Canada, it's their first since 1986.
Correct.
Yeah, the right year. But they obviously didn't get out of the group stage. They played very fun and open soccer.
Yeah, which was the opposite of how they played in qualifying. Like, they were not playing fun and open soccer. They were very, I think, pragmatic, and they have absolutely dynamic counterattacking players, but not a lot of guys who can crack open a defense in possession. And for some reason, they played on the front foot in Qatar. I didn't think it was a great choice, and it didn't work out well, but it made those games a lot more fun to watch.
So in thinking about this, I guess let's say it's Herdman, right? Let's say we trust the reporters at the Athletic. I guess my thought process is he said
it was a favorite, the front runner.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Gouged up for me, Taylor.
So he could still trip right before the finish line and someone else could finish. is it this is the guy to take Insigne and Bernadeschi and make it work? Or is it this has already failed? This is the guy to rebuild our club.
I don't have an answer for that because everything about this is opaque to me. Do we even know who's made? If this is, we're assuming this decision is done. Is this Bill Manning making the decision? Is it Jason Hernandez?
Manning and Hernandez, but all together? This needs to be okayed by the board. So a lot of cooks in the kitchen here, and like hence why this is taking a little bit of time, and hence why we are being very careful with our wording. Because if it, you know, you could get a different story from any different of these angles, and again, ultimately the board gets to decide.
The reason it makes sense to me is one of the best traits that I've heard about Herdman anecdotally is the idea that he's built a culture around Canada soccer. And so the team is a collection of really talented young players that he's brought together to have, you know, a real sense of belief to go challenge the US and the Mexico teams, like, you know, superiority or you know, that long held belief that Canada can't compete at the international level. It never gotten to the hex until qualifying for this World Cup. And so for
that's not true, but
it's not true.
No, they got to the hex in 1998.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But they hadn't been since then.
Since 1998.
So this time it was the Ocho, not the Hex. Okay. Remember, they weren't going to qualify until the COVID pause happened because it was only going to be the top six teams. And then they magically changed it to the top eight teams. So Canada.
This is why I don't work at The Athletic, by the way. it'd been a while. Okay. We can agree that they did challenge the U.S.
They finished first. They won the Ocho. they gave themselves a sword.
Yeah, and when the biggest piece that seems broken in Toronto is
I don't like the idea of Bernadeschi having the sword in his.
That's dangerous.
Anyways, the biggest piece that seems broken up there is the culture piece. And so somebody to come in, if you are going to remake the team, they've already moved on from Marc-Anthony Kay. He's gone to New England. They've got rid of Hedges now to Austin. So they're dumping salary. They're trying to like move pieces to create flexibility moving forward. I expect way more changes to happen over the next, you know, into the winter.
It seems like Michael Bradley is probably going to retire, according to report or whispers I've heard from up north.
Shocked if he didn't. I thought that it was more likely he wasn't going to play again this year than it was he was going to play next year. So it's glad to see
And we think that both Insigne and Bernadeschi are gone this winter.
So this is all fluid too. And again, the new coach will have input. And again, whatever happens with if there's a front office, if there's more people that come in, or if there's departures, whatever. Like, if I had to guess right now, the most likely scenario would be they try to convince Insigne to stay and Bernadeschi leaves. I'd be very, very surprised if both of them are here, just given how it's gone over the last year and our reporting on you know, the dynamics within this team. But I don't know. I still if Bologna or another Serie A club come with a loan offer for Bernadeschi that has any sort of salary coverage, like if you're Toronto, you probably do that, right? Like, so I don't even know if they'll both be here for the end of the season, but I think in their perfect world that they still believe that Insigne can be the face of the club and lead a team in MLS. But again, this is I couch this to be boring. This is all fluid right now. There is no firm decision being made. And even if there is a decision that's made, the new coach, if it's Herdman, he can come in next week and say, well, actually, like, I can work with these guys. Just give me a chance to rebuild the culture, right? Like, and then that changes the mat. So
if this happens permanently, then we'll talk about what it means for Canada. I don't want to do that here because it's fluid. I don't know if you've heard that recently, so it may not happen. And then we'll obviously get up to date in that situation, everything that goes on with Toronto, who lost 3-2 this weekend, but it was the first two goals they've scored in Terry Dunfield's interim time. And they were both scored by Bernadeschi because he's on my Golden Boot team and the rise is now. Let's finish the newsy stuff before we get into the weekend preview. Now that we're 800 minutes into this episode with Georgi Petrovic reports, I'm pointing at Tom if you're not watching once again, that Chelsea are about to close a signing of Georgi Petrovic from the New England Revolution for $17.5 million up front with potential add-ons to that. It'll be the largest transfer for a goalkeeper in MLS history. Gaga is second, and it is, where would it sit in all-time MLS
transfers? I believe sixth. Depending
on the sixth largest goalkeeper transfer of all time?
No, sixth in MLS.
Oh, right.
So I believe that it's sorry. Just
he was probably paid more than that five times by themselves.
That's a good point. That's why I was. That's why I was surprised. I was like, that doesn't make sense.
Of all of MLS transfers,
the big smile on his face to tell me, "Oh, you're wrong."
Yeah. So obviously a massive moment for the Revs. Second time they're doing this in a year, which we'll get into.
Wild.
Why now? How did it happen? Walk us through sort of what this has been.
Yeah. So just talking to sources around the club and just in the soccer world of like, I could have called the Revs every single day and said, hey, I heard this team's interested. They'd be like, yeah, probably. Like there's so many teams that were scouting him, interested in him and wanted him. Like Manchester United had a scout there like every game, like this year and towards the end of last year. Like he's been on the radars of these clubs for a while. And my assumption was that a deal would ultimately end up happening this summer as it did, but the Revs were absolutely intent. We want to keep you till the winter. We will take a lesser transfer fee in the winter so that we can have the best possible chance for a title this year. That's why they rejected two very good bids from Nottingham Forest and Nantes, which would have been about 10 million. Could have been a new league record for a goalkeeper if it was 10 million and a dollar, because Gaga Slonina from Chicago to Chelsea was 10 million up front with add-ons. So they were very intent. That's why they didn't sign a goalkeeper at the end of the window. And I still think, regardless, they should have, because the way that the domino effect, as Andrew Wiebe would say, the domino effect of Thibaut Courtois towards ACL. Real Madrid signed Kepa from Chelsea, and then Chelsea needed a goalie. So whether it was going to be Chelsea that ultimately came for him, but whatever that domino that came in, it's like a musical chairs of goalkeepers. Georgi Petrovic was absolutely going to be on this food chain. It was just whether it was going to be Chelsea or another club that would have to replace a goalie that Chelsea ended up signing. So
in fairness, though, the two offers you said from before are nowhere in the range of both number or like quality level of a Chelsea.
Exactly. So Petrovic wanted those offers to be accepted, upset at first, and then died down. He's like, I understand why. I get it. And like, they're on the same page. Then when Chelsea came in, if they rejected a 17.5 million bid from Chelsea for your goalkeeper, like,
you lose the player.
Yeah. And you probably lose the locker room too, because all the other players are like, all right, yeah, I get it. Like, we'd rather Georgie be here, but like, come on, if that was me, like, I'd be doing the same thing, right? Like, so the talks were relatively quick for Chelsea and for a deal of this magnitude, because they came in pretty strong. Like when I reported the first bid, I think it was Friday, and then by Monday, driving home from the show is when I got the first text of, yeah, it's done. Everything's agreed. Everything's happening.
And not only is he going, and as you said, with Kepa, he's going to compete for the first job.
Yeah, with Robert Sanchez. And I wrote it as, for deep MLS cuts, my original article in my first draft, I wrote Richard Sanchez.
Wow.
And my editor was like, this is a beautiful typo. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, MLS has ruined my brain.
The backup goalkeeper right now is Lucas Bergstrom, who's a 20-year-old Finnish.
And just so folks know, Gaga Slonina is not on the depth chart right now. He's in Belgium on loan for the year with Eupen.
Yeah.
So, and Gaga's 4 years younger than Georgi Petrovic is. So like there is we're talking almost a half decade for the time frame for Gaga to be at a point where he would conceivably, you know, compete for that number one spot. I want to get to some numbers. My friend Kieran Doyle, who's all over Twitter, he's a Canadian goalkeeper coach.
I thought it was just a burner account of yours.
No, it's not. and he's a big Chelsea fan. And this is what he put out earlier this week on Twitter. On X. from 2018 to 2023, Georgi Petrovic is 142 goals conceded from roughly 178 expected goals. So he gives up 4 goals for every 5 he should. That's 0.80 across a variety of leagues and contexts, right? So it's not just MLS. It's also Serbian league and stuff he's done with the national team as well. The best comparables I've got are Alisson, 189 goals conceded on 219 expected goals. So that's 0.86. So excellent, but not as good as Petrovic. Maignan at 175 goals at 192 expected goals, so that's 0.91. That's the AC Milan goalkeeper. Thibaut Courtois, 160 goals allowed on 178 expected goals, so that's 0.90. And Bryce Samba, who I believe plays for Lens, 235 goals on 270 expected goals. That's 0.87. That's it. That's the entire list of the greatest shot stoppers in the world. Matt Turner's in there as well, just sub 0.9. And we know Matt Turner is a starter in the Premier League. Petrovic is far and away across multiple competitions at 23 years of age, the best by the numbers shot stopper in this selection. I think this guy is going to be a starter for Chelsea. I think in 2 years' time, 17 and a half million and whatever the add-ons are going to look like a steal. And I think because of this, this is another one of those deals, another one of those player development success stories that's going to cause teams from all over the world to come want to shop in MLS. And it's going to cause players from all over the world, but specifically Serbia, which we know produces a ton of talent, soccer and in hoops, going to want to come and play here. It's a great bit of work from the Revs.
What did they sign him for?
Just million. Under a million.
So if you add Matt Turner's number in, which now there's some sell on to Nottingham Forest from Arsenal that the Revs are getting that we're not 100% sure what that is, and you take away what they paid for Georgi Petrovic, and then you add in now what they're making, in the last 12 months or 13 months, they've made $24 million off goalkeeper sales alone.
Yeah.
That's more than many MLS clubs have made on transfers ever combined. That doesn't include Tejan Buchanan.
Yeah.
And doesn't include what we think will be potential more moves coming and other small moves that have happened, or, you know, whatever Dwan Jones is in the whatever, anything else. That's goalkeepers in the last year and a half. They've made $24 million. It is wild. I think you're right about it opening a door of, like, I thought when Petrovic came, it was unique. 22-year-old from Serbia. Mm-hmm. That's not really what you see. I think you're going to see a lot of people now say this can be a pathway for me, which I think it used to be for Eastern Europe. Just get into Champions League and prove yourself there, or Europa League or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's your only shot. And now you look at this and it has not historically been a, like, big European team window coming to a close. We look to MLS to fix the spot that we have open that we're not sure what to do with. Yeah. So all of it feels
and
huge.
The Revs are saying next time, absolutely not, because they're about to sign a 34-year-old Czech international goalkeeper to... like, lightning struck twice for them.
We keep our goalkeeper.
Yeah, and like, it makes sense. I can't pronounce the gentleman's last.
Tomas Vaclik.
So, and you reported this, or and our friend Seth McComber, shout out Seth, he reported this as well. And he's
nearing a deal.
Nearing a deal. He is 34 years old, vastly experienced Czech international. I think 55 caps.
54, and he started their last game.
Okay,
come on,
so
dude, don't add a cap.
Yeah, sorry. He played for Huddersfield Town last season. He was at Sevilla before that, about 70 games with Sevilla. A lot of experience with Basel, which is a Champions League team basically every year out of Switzerland. Looks like kind of a no-brainer replacement for a stretch run where the Revs are still harboring hopes of lifting an MLS Cup.
And the context obviously being that at this point, the player had to have been a free agent when the MLS transfer window closed, because last year we spent 5 months talking about succession planning for Matt Turner and how they'd brought in Petrovic. They knew Turner would leave. They're putting together a plan there. As Tom mentioned, there was none this time because the move came unexpectedly, because the Revs planned it poorly, quite honestly. So they don't really have much of a choice. The other one, when we went and looked on transfer market, so David Ochoa is a free agent and Nick Marsman is a free agent. And whether he's not, we're not sure. It might not even matter because he was in Major League Soccer.
Wasn't that good?
He was not very good. The other names are David De Gea, and then the list goes down from there.
And Josh Cohen, who they had some interest in. They rated Vaclik ahead of Cohen, but Atlanta United have Cohen's discovery rights and made an offer. And that the two sides are far apart.
That actually makes a lot of sense for Atlanta.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were in for him last year as well with the same idea of, like, and maybe we'll loan you if we need to, like, if, you know, depending on the map. But again, the two sides aren't close, so we'll see what happens there. He has an offer on the table from Scotland. He could go back to Israel if, like, there's plenty of interest there from Maccabi Haifa and other teams. So we'll kind of see how that unfolds.
David, do you say Maccabi or Maccabi?
Maccabi. They're two different things.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. They're not the same entity that you're talking about.
Huh?
Yeah. Andrew Putna, by the way, is on that transfer market list. If you put your like, if you size it correctly, he gets on the first page. So shout out to Andrew Putna for potentially being one of the best free agent goalkeepers in the world right now based off transfer market. That brings us to greatness. Let's talk Messi to Major League Soccer. And then we're ready to get out of here. He will play his first MLS game of his career this weekend because he's only played in Leagues Cup and Open Cup.
So we don't know how he'll do in MLS.
In
really.
The great state of New Jersey, because, of course, he had to come and kiss the ring to soccer royalty, soccer history in this country.
You mean Andrew Wiebe?
Not me. He's not kissing my ring. He's kissing the Kearney, all of the New Jersey soccer history, the legends.
Love it. Love it.
Claudio Reyna, Tab Ramos, all these guys. Tony Miola. He should kiss Tony Miola's ring. That's what I'm saying.
I'm sure he's going to. I'm sure that's going to be a big part of the pregame.
And you didn't say John Tolkien's ring.
He's JMI, baby.
I mean, they'll be going head to head.
I can't wait. It's so much fun.
John Tolkien's not scared of anything.
Yeah.
He'll probably have a new hairstyle just for the game. So Messi to MLS, obviously the big convo is, can they make the playoffs? Sasha Kljestan did math. We talked about it. We pretty much did that on Monday.
Any math takes for you, Kalen? You weren't here for that? Okay.
Because you went to Cal, right?
Yeah. This is the second time in a week someone's like, oh,
it's an Ivy League
you
of the West
should
situation.
Know math. And I'm like, what? Yeah. Why would this
oh,
make
because
me-
if you went to Stanford, you'd know math. But Cal's not a big
I don't know.
School with numbers and learning.
Yeah. I haven't taken a math class in a long time.
Really? I thought Tom Kinnear would have sort of put that in the, like, you got to stretch your brain and your body type training.
It's messy. That's my math. Okay.
Okay. I mean, this moment's going to be wild. Like, I know, being from here, the moment he signed and the schedule was, everyone looked at the schedule. I know people that scrambled to go get tickets and say, I want to be there. And I think we've all been in a full Red Bull Arena for big games. Like, it is one of the best atmospheres. It holds noise. It bounces. It's going to be electric. It's going to be exciting. You said you're going
to
be there?
Yep. I'll be in the press
to cover
box.
It.
Yeah.
And you covered him in Philly.
Yep.
And that's, this will be your second time.
Yep.
Seeing him. Are you most excited about anything? Thoughts about this?
I'm extremely, so the, you go super nerdy inside press box, big serious journalism guy. The Red Bull Arena press box is right behind the benches. I can't wait. It's like basically field level. And again, you can hear Tata Martino and Troy Lezane, whatever they're shouting. And I hope I can hear John Tolkien talking smack to Lionel Messi when he's on that side. But I'm really excited to kind of be field level-ish to watch Lionel Messi. It's going to be a different experience.
It's going to be wild. We had, I believe Tom said that they would make the playoffs.
Yeah.
In the East, do you have a... You were not here, so I didn't want to give you your opportunity.
Who are you talking about?
Miami.
Miami? I wasn't sure if you meant Red Bull.
Bulls? You could go either way.
I think Red Bull is going to get in. I could see Miami. I think they're going to make it very close. I don't know whether they're going to get in or just miss it.
That's
but
a question, so...
Okay. Cool. They're going to get in. They're in.
Wow. Some maybe lost the locker room here.
I backed you. I fully backed you before.
Look, now we got you to the answer and we agreed.
I'm never clicking on any of your articles.
We did the whole thing with Philly.
Even the Wrexham articles?
Those are good. I'll click those.
It's not my beat.
We did the whole thing with Philly. High pressing. What will Miami look like? Philly just didn't really show up.
Yeah.
Just what do you make of a Red Bull Inter Miami matchup with Messi and Busquets and all this other stuff? And Red Bull's just, you know, straight to the DNA. It breaks your brain. That's what I feel too.
Yeah.
To watch Tom Barlow and Messi on the same field at the same time is like one of those things. You just, that's not how you wrote the script, you know?
Or it is, really. It obviously will not be the first time in the career of Messi or Busquets or Jordi Alba that they're facing a vicious high press. I would expect them to be able to handle it. That said, they were on the road in Nashville last weekend. They're on the road tonight in Cincinnati in an Open Cup semifinal, and then they follow,
which will be high pressing as well.
Yeah. And then they follow that up with a road trip to the Red Bulls. At some point, these guys have got to rest.
Mm-hmm. I hope it's not Saturday.
Well, we're recording before the Open Cup. Like, I half expect them to not come on till the hour mark in Cincinnati. I half expect Tata Martino to try to grind it out a 0-0 at that point and then bring on Messi and Busquets and Alba fresh for the final half hour. If it doesn't happen in that game, like, I would expect them to go to Red Bull Arena and lose. I would expect the Red Bulls to actually win this game, because even Messi, even Busquets, even Jordi Alba, they're human and their legs are going to go. And what Messi did in the Leagues Cup is not replicable. It's not, even for him. Like, that level of finishing does not happen consistently over the course of, you know, a 15 game sample size.
Reminder, there's a full slate of midweeks next week. Yep. So all of these teams are prepping for a three games.
And this is a six-pointer, man.
Coming up. It is two teams that are sitting, well, Inter Miami's well outside the playoff line.
I don't see.
Red Bulls are just below it. I do believe Dante Van Zier limped off in the game against DC United, so maybe unavailable. Otherwise, Red Bulls have gotten fairly healthy over the last month or so.
Yeah, but I don't see a way for them to beat Miami. Interesting. They can't score any goals. They've scored one more goal than.
Yeah, but Dallas couldn't score goals and they scored four.
Okay. Dallas has Jesus Ferreira.
Fair. That's a good point.
Like they've scored one more goal than Inter Miami actually so far in the season, but Inter Miami now is a completely different team. And I don't think we'll see what happens in the match tonight, but I think the teams that are trying to play really defensive, it's not going to work against Miami because they're going to find a moment. And then if you go into a shootout, you maybe have a better chance, but I still don't. We saw the Dallas team try to do that. But I don't know if Red Bull can't play that type of match either. If they get the lead, they can't hold on to it. Like they've had trouble with that. So I really think Inter Miami is big favorites in this one. Whether Messi plays 30 minutes or 90 minutes, I see them. I think this will be a good start for them getting back into league play and starting to try to make their way up the table.
As Doyle said, massive game sitting outside the playoff lines for both these teams. All right, let's get a little extra preview in here of the weekend. Each of you picked a game. Give us your take of why you're excited about it, what you want to see. And that's all we're going to do because Maria told me that we're running out of time. Tom, we'll start with you. Atlanta, Nashville. Give us the skinny.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how Nashville bounces back from a very painful Leagues Cup final loss to Inter Miami. Again, but Hani Mukhtar and Sam Surge watching their partnership continue to blossom. And anytime Thiago Almada plays, it's must watch. So I'm really looking forward to this game.
Wow, that was very skinny. Good job, Tom. Better way to listen. Doyle, you have SKC San Jose.
I do. This might ring the curtain down on Sporting Kansas City season, right? Because everybody in the Western Conference that they're chasing, they're on 26 points, so they're 5 points below the line. Everybody in the Western Conference has at least one game in hand on them. Most have two.
Yeah.
And this is a home game. After this one, they will have only four home games left. They will have only seven games in total left. It is like if they don't beat San Jose in this one, San Jose is basically uncatchable for them. I think Houston would probably be uncatchable at this point for them as well. They do have Alan Pulido back. They've been a better team with him on the field this year, but they've been a really pretty good team. Yeah. 1.5 points per game when he plays. 1.5 points per game down the stretch will not get Sporting Kansas City into the playoffs. They need to be about 2 points per game in their final eight games of the season there. And even that might not be enough. So this is Sporting Kansas City's season.
That's a pretty good pitch.
And for San Jose, who've been terrible on the road all year, they went to Vancouver last weekend. They got a 1-0. Daniel had a game, their Brazilian goalkeeper. He had a Georgi Petrovic type game. Like he was absolutely fantastic. He's probably not going to win goalkeeper of the year. He's been hurt too much, missed too much time. And I think Roman Berkey probably has it sewed up now that Petrovic is gone. But he's been a match winner for them. If they get so much as a point on the road, what a successful road trip this will have been for the Quakes.
Kalen, you put down Orlando St. Louis.
I did, yeah. Orlando, impressive win over Chicago. And I thought they were good in Leagues Cup as well, too. The big shift that they've made towards the last, I don't know, month or two has been to go with two sixes. So they were at times kind of playing before with Mauricio Pereira playing a little bit deeper at times, and the balance was a little bit off. They hadn't quite figured out what to do with Ojeda, so now he goes to the bench. They've pushed Mauricio Pereira higher, and then Cartagena and Araujo as those like twin sixes there. And that's really, we saw it in them trying to deal with Inter Miami at times to success, at times obviously not. But even if you think of the like Santos Laguna game, the late winner they had is one pass from one to the next. And Araujo wins that ball to begin with. So they've just continued. Cartagena got one off a corner kick. Araujo got another, the second goal challenges it, and it comes down to Angulo in Chicago. So they've just been in good form. I feel like the only issue is their home form actually hasn't been as good as you would think. Their away form has been very good. They beat Atlanta on the last game before Leagues Cup, and then just went to Chicago and got, I thought, a pretty mature, savvy win coming from behind. So, and then St. Louis has just been continuing to score a ton of goals. João Klaus, I think, is back training now. Sounds like so we've continued, which has just turned into the longest saga ever. It's a little bit interesting as well because
Joe Keeney, if you score six goals, you're like, take another week.
Yeah. Well, Joe Keeney as well, he got another one, and now he's going back to Orlando. I thought that was like an interesting wrinkle there with him going back. So they just have to limit mistakes because Antonio Carlos was out, Schlegel's in. There were a couple nervy moments there with Chicago where they were able to get in behind. So they have to be careful about, especially in that build out. There's a lot of pressure on Janssen to get it right.
Yeah, to your point, Orlando, five wins at home so far this season. Only one other playoff current team has the same number or less, and that's Chicago.
Joe Keeney, by the way, is tied with Jesus Ferreira for leading scorers among domestic players. It's interesting. Wow. I don't think anybody saw that coming, least of all Orlando City, of course, who had Joe Keeney on the roster last year, and he didn't do much for them, but he's been great. He's been great for St. Louis this year.
Orlando just has to bring in DP so they can bench them and then and play other random guys.
Caitlin, what game are you calling? Are you on the call?
I'm in LA Galaxy, Chicago. So new look,
just
LA.
Following the fire around.
Yeah. I didn't get a fire game all year, and now I didn't bring a lot of great luck to them in Chicago. It was good to see old friends.
They took the lead.
They did. And Kai Kamara is still chasing that record. One away from Landon Donovan, and the games in LA where Kai grew up, basically.
You can't play Kai just because, you know, the way Kutsias rides that back line
and
the offside line. He was off on them, wide open tapping from Gutierrez because he couldn't keep
Sasha
his spacing.
Sasha ripped him.
Sasha was crushing him.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. I didn't even know that, but there we go. Mine was FC Dallas, Austin FC. If Austin wins, they win Copa Tejas. If they tie, Houston still has a shot. If they lose, Dallas and Houston both still have a shot. Austin just gave up six goals. I have no idea what this team is, but I'm excited to hopefully see the Dallas from Leagues Cup come into MLS.
I want to see Velasco play as a number 10, right?
Yeah, and I want to see them just be a little bit more direct, a little bit more dangerous, and play with some level of intensity.
And with some Bernardo Camungo out there.
And Iaramendi should debut in this game, probably won't start. So that's big news for Dallas as well. And that's it for our weekend preview. So we'll be back on Monday with weekend reaction stuff, as well as Open Cup stuff. We're going to be 7 days late, just loving Open Cup final.
Is Weeby back on Monday?
Probably, but maybe he'll go to Asbury. Are you in?
No, I'm not here, so that means he won't be
here. Yeah. The give and take. New Jersey can only allow one to leave.
It's like share a pass to... Because
if one's not there, then the state is, you know, potentially invadable. But you, as long as one's there, stay out. So they protect their things. Thank you to Maria for helping us out. Shout out to Anders just salmon fishing and doing whatever he's doing on this thing.
He's in Miami. They don't have salmon in Miami.
No, he's just counting messengers.
What he's doing, they have invasive tiger fish in the coral reefs down in Miami. So he's probably down
there. Yes, catching it with his hands.
Yeah, well, probably not doing that.
Yeah. You can go, and I think there's another invasive thing at the Everglades that they'll pay you to hunt, but I don't know.
Pythons.
Is it snakes?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if it's snakes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you want to do that, feel free. But if not, thank you to listening to the show with the A-team.
You could do both. You could listen to our show while spearfishing for pythons in the Everglades.
The B-plus team will be back on Monday. And with that, bye.